Bonjour. Bonjour.
Welcome to this new episode of So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from our studio in the heart of Paris.
And we also say a special bonjour to our listeners on air on World Radio Paris, the digital radio station in the Paris region. So French is broadcasted every second Saturday on 5:30 p.m. and then rebroadcasted throughout the week.
My name is Sarah Bertelsson.
And my name is Stefan de Vries.
This week, with a little more than 1 week to go before the first round of the presidential elections, we're taking a new look at the French left. Because after a surprising surge in the latest polls, could we be facing a runoff between the extreme left and the far right?
And we also ask what's left of Nuit Debout, the grassroots movement that grew out of the protests against the new labor laws here in France. 1 year later, the up-all-night protesters are no longer out at the Place de la République here in Paris, but does that mean that the movement has died down?
We're going to have dinner with the severe but righteous food critic Jay Rayner.
And of course, Maud Descamps brings us a fresh French word of the day. But first...
Well, next Sunday, the 23rd of April, is the first round of the presidential election here in France. 11 candidates in the running, a campaign that has been nothing of what we expected it to be.
Ça suffit, le déclin national.
Ce projet qui est le nôtre, c'est un projet qui libère et qui protège. Soyez fiers du projet que nous...
It is indeed probably the most surprising campaign ever in the history of French presidential elections. It's almost surreal, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and I mean, we've been talking about the different. We've been talking about how Fillon was the favorite, and then he, you know, with all the scandals, he dropped in the polls, and then we had the surge of Emmanuel Macron, who's sort of like the third man, and now we have a new surprise actually, because we have been talking about how badly the left has been doing in this campaign, but suddenly. This last week, we've seen a sort of a surprise rise of the French left.
Yeah, Jean-Luc Mélenchon is his name, 65 years old, already in French politics for over 30 years. He's also a member of the European Parliament. He is seen as the survivor of the true spirit of socialism by some and by others as the last communist dinosaur, which is maybe a pleonasm, communist dinosaur, but of France. So he's a pretty controversial figure, but he is really appealing to a large part of the population of the French who think that the left still should get a chance to run this country. He was doing pretty well. He was doing a good campaign, but he was still always hovering around 10%, 11%. And now suddenly there was a surge in the last 2 weeks. And
it's reaching almost 19%, I think, in some of the polls.
Yes, and we should say that François Fillon, of course, the candidate of the Conservatives, who has been involved in many scandals, is also around 19, 20% in spite of all the scandals. And the other two, the two biggest candidates, Le Pen and Macron, are around 22-23%. So we have four candidates who are around 20-21%. And that only, about a week before the real election takes place. So it's a complete, unknown territory.
So what do you think is, why is Mélenchon surging now in the polls?
Well, I think he led a very good campaign. Of course, he's controversial, but he is a very gifted speaker in public. He is rather funny, has always an answer, la répartie, that's something the French really like, the l'esprit. So he's a good speaker. He had a very aggressive image, especially against politicians and even more so against journalists.
Exactly, against media. He's an old journalist himself.
Absolutely. He started as a journalist before he went into politics. But I think he underwent some very professional media training the last 2-3 years because he has become much milder. And I think that contributes to his success.
He was a bit of a joke during the first presidential, the first debate that was a couple of weeks ago. He was a bit of the joker. He was throwing in some small witty lines here and there and making people laugh, actually.
Absolutely.
During this quite serious and pretty boring debate, to be honest.
Yeah, but what he said was really pertinent. His remarks were not just like cheap jokes, but they really made a point. And he was seen as one of the winners of that debate together with Emmanuel Macron. What he also does very well is his campaign on internet, on social media. He has a huge amount of followers on the YouTube. He tries a lot of new technologies. For instance, he used a hologram for a meeting a couple of, about 2 months ago. And he will do it again this next week for his last meeting. He will be actually present in 7 different cities simultaneously across France by using a hologram. Well, it sounds like a gadget, but people actually really like it. And
it's creating media attention, of course.
Absolutely. So this about the guy, what does he really want, actually? What's in his program of Jean-Luc Mélenchon?
But he's a very traditional left-wing candidate, and he is the left, the most of the left, the most left of the leftist candidates, if to say. And he's got a traditionally left-wing program, and one of the things as well that we've been talking about before is how he wants to, doesn't necessarily want to leave the European Union, but he's very, very critical of the European Union, and he's saying that he wants to reform the European Union in a way that it actually benefits the workers in the union. So he's not a Frexit in that way that he actually wants to leave the union, but you know, he admits that there are major problems with the organization itself. Of course, he's got a in the sense of traditionally left-wing program, in the sense that he wants, of course, to invest more money in social programs in comparison to, for example, François Fillon, who wants to cut very, very heavily in everything that is healthcare, public sector, and social programs.
If he wins on the 23rd of April, well, when he comes in second, he will probably face off against Marine Le Pen. That's a horror story.
This is what many are calling the nightmare scenario.
Yes. Of
course, not everyone. The voters for Marine Le Pen and Mélenchon would not agree on that. But many others are calling this a nightmare scenario, because that would mean we would have a far-right candidate up against a very much extreme left candidate. And both of them, because this, what's happening when we start talking about this scenario, is that the markets are actually starting to shake quite heavily, because this is for them, or this is for people in finance, one of the worst scenarios imaginable, because of course a Frexit, a France leaving the European Union, would scare the markets very much, and also that, you know, for example, Jean-Luc Mélenchon has said that he is going to up taxes on rich people to, you know, very, very high numbers.
To give an example, it will be forbidden to earn more than 33,000 euros a month, which sounds as a lot to us, but it's basically around 400,000 euros a year. Now, take for instance all the football players in France who earn 400,000 at least per month. Well, that will be done. France will be no longer a football country.
Yeah, probably. And the market analysts are saying that, you know, that could make people, you know, with money and also other businesses, would not invest in France and also leave the country altogether if that would be the case. But I mean, we're not there yet, but you know, we can see that this is a scenario that many wasn't even thinking about.
No, it sounded completely crazy
a couple of weeks ago, but you know, at least now people are starting to talk about it, and some also getting a little bit nervous.
Yes, and one thing that also fascinates me, that, well, Jean-Luc Mélenchon does not really say that he wants to leave the European Union, but he's not against leaving the European Union either. He would like to get rid of the euro. And if he wants to get rid of the euro, it might well be possible that we will pay with sucre. Do you know what the sucre is?
No.
Well, that's the money. It's a virtual currency of the Bolivarian Alliance for the Peoples of our America. Now, Jean-Luc Mélenchon is very much inspired by the Bolivarian revolutions in Southern America, in Venezuela, Bolivia, etc.
A big fan of Hugo Chavez.
A big fan, yeah. And there is a sort of European Union for those countries. It's called ALBA. And actually, Jean-Luc Mélenchon would like to join ALBA. So he wants to become a member of the Bolivarian Alliance for the Peoples of our America. So France will become a South American country. And they also have this money, the sucre, or the virtual currency. So maybe we will pay in sucre when he becomes president.
Exciting times ahead.
Absolutely. Just a year ago, France witnessed the birth of a new social movement called Nuit Debout, or Standing Night, or standing up, right up at night. It began on the 31st of March last year as a protest against proposed labor reforms now as the El Khomri Law. But the movement didn't stop after the law was signed, and it became something bigger that embraced every anger anyone has against the system. It was a movement in the city of, in the heart of the Paris, at the Place de la République, but it spread out to other cities as well. And everybody thought that this was going to be a bit like the Podemos movement in Spain or other successful citizens' initiatives in Europe. But a year later, well, what happened, Maud? Does Nuit Debout still exist?
Well, it still does, but in a very different way. As you may know, the Place de la République, the Republic Square, is now empty. So the protesters have for some choose to let it go, and they went back to work or to do their studies. But some others, like Céline, have decided to create a group to keep the project going on, the project of a new society. And according to this young activist, Nuit Debout has now taken a new shape.
Okay, let's listen to Céline, who is a member of Nuit Debout.
But we often see now in the media that Nuit Debout is over, that it's a failure, that it's just, now the anniversary, but there's nothing actually going on. But the reality is that people are actually working for the future. The agenda of Nuit Debout has changed a lot. It's no longer a daily occupation of Place de la République. It has transformed into a work in progress on a long-term basis.
Construction pour avoir des bases solides pour continuer après.
So, Mo, do you think there will actually be candidates from Nuit Debout this year at the parliamentary election, or maybe in a couple of years in 2020 when there are new municipal elections?
Well, I think we can't say for sure, but it seems that the movement is still there. And there is one candidate actually at the legislative election who was one of the founders of Nuit Debout, the filmmaker François Ruffin. I know that this candidate, he's a candidate in Picardy, in the Picardy region in the north of France, as a Picardy Debout candidate.
So that's just one candidate in the north of the country. But why does it take such a long time before the others are being candidates?
It took 3 years to movements like the Indignados, the anti-austerity movement in Spain, to actually become an organized political movement, Podemos, and some other movement like Occupy Wall Street, whose idea have been brought into the presidential campaign 5 years after the movement appears by the candidate Bernie Sanders.
Yes, and the French Bernie Sanders, according to some people, is Jean-Luc Mélenchon. And some people of this movement are also working for Mélenchon or
yes,
activists.
Actually, there was two political branches in Nuit Debout. There was the citizen branch, and they actually built a collective or association, organization, non-profit organization. And the other branch was the political one, but they couldn't agree on one candidate. So this branch kind of exploded, and that's why a lot of protesters from the political branches choose to work and to follow Jean-Luc Mélenchon for this political campaign.
Yes, and that's Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the left-wing candidate who's doing surprisingly well in the polls. Thank you very much, Maud Descamps.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
It's time to talk about food now, one of my favorite topics, Sarah.
Yes, well, we're actually not going to talk actually about the food, but more about a food fight. The French and the Brits, they have been quarreling for, well, I would say 1,000 years. This week, a new battle, and it was taken to the table. It's a very chic table, actually. It's at the restaurant of Le Cinq, of the very exclusive Georges Cinq Hotel here in Paris. And it was launched, to say, by the British culinary critic and writer Jay Rayner. He had dinner at the flagship Michelin 3-star restaurant, and he was not very happy. He wrote a quite sharp and funny, to be fair, but also very severe review of the restaurant. Stefan, just give us a couple of the quotes from this review.
Yeah, here's the one I like most. The canapé we are instructed to eat first is a transparent ball on a spoon. It looks like a Barbie-sized silicone breast implant. And about the onion soup, Jay Rayner wrote, "It is mostly black, like nightmares, and sticky, like the floor at a teenager's party." And then his conclusion, "Le Cinq is by far the worst restaurant experience I have endured in my 18 years in this job."
So this review has had both its supporters and, of course, its critics. It has created quite a fuss online this
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. It was a big hit on social media, and it made the French, well, very predictably, very angry as well. And we are very delighted to talk to Jay Rayner now. He's one of the UK's best-known culinary critics, and we have him on the line now. Well, Jay Rayner, you must have been under siege this week from France, were you?
I have to admit, actually, it's not just France, it's global. I've been a print journalist for 25, 30 years, and so I've been there from the beginning of online journalism where you can see a reach. The scale of this one has been absolutely enormous. We have ways of measuring our reach on the Guardian newspaper website. And normally I get maybe 50 to 75,000 page views on my restaurant reviews, a standard one. There are some that are bigger than that. But this one has gone to 1.75 million. And what's also really interesting to me is that the spread has been literally global. Only a third of those 1.75 million were actually in the UK. The other two thirds were spread across the world with quite a lot in France, funnily enough.
Yes.
Quite a lot in France.
And how would you explain this worldwide attention?
I've been writing long enough to know when I've written something that's going to be of interest to people, I say euphemistically. I knew when I'd finished writing it that it was going to attract some attention. I didn't go to the restaurant with that intention, I must say. I have to say that from the very first start. People have been deeply suspicious of that opening couple of paragraphs of mine where I said, I went there to have a nice time. And it's true, I did. I went to Le Cinq because a friend of mine who lives in Paris had suggested it. I had to be there because, I don't know if you know, I do a radio show on BBC Radio 4 called The Kitchen Cabinet. We were recording our 100th episode. So we decided to record it from Paris. So I had to be there. And I thought it'd be fun to just take the Observer reader into a classic Parisian gastro palace, to one of those, you know, Michelin three stars. The Observer readers whinge about price. And I wanted to say, well, you don't know when you were born. This is what it can really cost. But hey, isn't it great and fabulous if you can afford it? Because I've always believed you should be able to spend whatever money you want on food if it's worth it. It was only... You know, after the meal that I had such a dismal, miserable, awful experience that I concluded this was going to be a different piece.
And when did you write this review? Was it immediately after the meal or did you take some time to digest it mentally and physically?
Within 48 hours. So I ate there on the Tuesday night. Stayed in Paris to record the radio show on the Wednesday. I wrote it on the Friday, actually. It was the same week. It was a pretty quick turnaround. And then went back to it a couple of times. But as I say, no, I knew what I'd done. I can't pretend about that. But it was done out of fury and out of real rage. Even after all this time, I still get angry. We should probably talk about, you know, the French response to this. One of the responses was, this is a man who knows nothing.
Yes, and they were not only saying that you knew nothing, but also that you were bashing the rich, that you were seeking revenge for Brexit, and that you loathe the frog-eating French.
Well, basically saying I'm a racist.
Yes, a British racist even. That's worse.
A British racist. Yeah, even worse. I voted Remain. I don't think anybody has been as despairing as I have in a restaurant column as me. I despair at the fact that we are leaving the European Union. I would direct you to a review of mine of a restaurant called Comptoir Blanford that was the meal was taken just before the vote. The review was written just after, and it's a howl of dismay and rage. I have been coming to France for years. And, go look at my reviews of Chez Georges or, Boffinger or whatever, you know, my writing of L'Auberge de Lille up in Alsace. To describe me as someone who hates France is ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous.
And have you been contacted by the management of Le Cinq or of the Georges Cinq Hotel?
No, Le Cinq has not contacted me, and nor would I expect them to. I wouldn't expect them to say anything. I think they were quite wise to be as circumspect as they actually were. It's a complicated business. They issued what I thought was quite a classy statement, dismissing this as less a critique than entertainment. I think even the statements, I understand it, even said that some of it was quite funny, but not something that the chef will be troubling himself about.
Now, I think this row, if we can call it like that, shows also something interesting about the two countries, and more specifically about the cultural difference between France and Britain when it comes to criticism.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fundamental. I should put my hand up and say that I'm not a great French speaker. I speak some, but not an awful lot. But I am sort of across French culture, and it seems to me that there is an antithesis to a really kind of bare-knuckled type of writing. There's a rather more bourgeois approach to the business of criticism, which is frankly politer.
Yeah, politer or more boring.
And that you just do not get the kind of punchy reviews that the British press adores. So I'm not sure anywhere in the world really does them as we do. You know, it's something peculiarly British, and has always been the way. If you go from, you know, Dr. Johnson and Samuel Pepys through Oscar Wilde, I'm not comparing myself to any of these people, it has to be said. Just that cultural tradition. Hogarth drawing his terrible cartoons of the wealthy classes.
And also Jonathan Swift.
Yeah, indeed. That kind of what's called piss and vinegar approach to taking on the absurd and the moneyed, which is without virtue. It is something the British have always done. I didn't even think about it in those terms, I have to say. But there was an interview yesterday on BBC Radio 4 with a French restaurant critic from one of the nationals, in which she essentially admitted that she sort of agreed with me the essence of what I was saying about the experience, from things like, you know, giving menus without prices to women, through to the starchiness of the service, and took no issue with me being critical of the cooking. But her real problem was with the tone. And this does seem to have been, you know, the essence of almost all the writing about this review, that the French are baffled by the stroppy, what they see as a kind of juvenile approach, that it's not very polite. It's not polite bourgeois society to talk about people in such terms and to swear and use profanities. Although I like to think that I use them in a very careful, pointed manner.
And speaking about careful, will you ever dare to come back to Paris to have dinner again?
Of course I'll be coming back to Paris. I love Paris. I adore it. I mean, you know, it was the move that night when I said to my companion, come on, let's go for a drink to get over this. And we went to the Hemingway bar at the back of the Ritz, which reopened last year. And in some ways it's just, you know, is ludicrous as well. Anywhere that charges 30 euros for a cocktail is bizarre, but they did it beautifully. And it was a perfect cocktail and a perfect room. And I felt like I was in the right place at the right time. There is a Paris there that is to be enjoyed. It's just not the Paris of Le Cinq.
Well, if you do come back, please know that next time you're in the city, I'll be happy to invite you to share a meal. I know an excellent Italian, not very far away from our offices. They charge just 20 euros for a dish that, in my humble opinion, deserves at least one star.
I look forward to it.
Okay, thank you very much, Jay Rayner, culinary critic of The Guardian. It's time for our So French word. Maud, bonjour.
Bonjour, Stéphane.
What have you chosen for us this week?
Well, I'll choose a very particular word this week. It's the word campagne.
Campagne.
Campagne, as the presidential campaign, the official presidential campaign just started this week, you know that. Just 2 weeks before the election. So everyone is in the starting blocks trying to win as many votes as they can.
So where does the word campagne comes from?
Well, not very original because it's come from the Latin as usual. It comes from the word campus, which means field. You know that the word campagne in French also means countryside. So we can see here the connection with the Latin roots. But a campagne is also a word the military people use, as in a military campaign. And by extension, the word campaign is used to describe a battle like the candidates are fighting right now.
Yeah, and we've seen that they are pretty violent. So the military origin for campaign is appropriate. And when did we first hear about a presidential campaign here in France?
Well, I think it was in 1965 because it was the first direct universal suffrage here in France. But it was also the appearing of a brand new equipment. Do you have an idea?
Probably the television.
Exactly, television.
Yes.
So at that time, there were only two TV channels controlled by the government. And a bill was signed the year before the election to allow each candidate to talk around 2 hours on TV and 2 hours on the radio. The General de Gaulle was one of the candidates, and there was another young candidate at that time called François Mitterrand.
He was already running against de Gaulle in 1965?
Yes, in 1965,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. The opinion polls gave the General de Gaulle a win, but a few days before the first round, the gap tightens, and so the General de Gaulle decided to give a long speech on TV and to make sure that he gained a lot of votes. And the night of the election, there was a big surprise because the candidate from the center wasn't the challenger of General de Gaulle, like the opinion poll said, but it was actually François Mitterrand, and no one saw that coming.
Okay, so at that time, the polls were already wrong.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Nothing new.
Yeah, so the debate around the accuracy was already existed in 1965. But at the end, General de Gaulle won the election with 55% of the votes.
Yes, and 4 years later he had to leave because he lost a referendum, right?
Exactly.
So that's campaign from the Latin word campus. Thank you very much, Maud.
Thank you.
See you soon. Well, that wraps up this edition of So French. We hope you've enjoyed it. Of course, it's election time, so if you want to follow the election news, please follow us on Twitter at So French News. And if you have any questions or suggestions, send us an email. Our address is sofrench@sofrench.news.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or in SoundCloud. And you can also find us on the TuneIn radio application and share our podcast with your friends. And remember, we are also available on World Radio Paris.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French online and on air. We hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening.
Au revoir.